New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. This is Johnny Blue Star on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Hugo Rodier. And this is going to be a very exciting time, Doctor, because we're going to discuss Medicare for All, which is becoming actually more of a media reality than ever before, possibly something that could actually happen, I think. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. As a matter of fact, aside from a rather serious digression, I've been eating vegan for like about 9 days. I did have a regression, but I really felt some definite benefits. So I'm really excited about my experiments. So I haven't really done that before. I was an ovo-lacto vegetarian and got really, really sick because I ate too much sugar and milk products and all that. For 20 years. So that's when I came to you. But I never got completely off. I got off that ovo-lacto thing and I started to eat more meat products and it became healthier in one respect anyway. But anyway, I thank you for that. And I thank you for letting me listen in on this program. So we're going to listen to Bernie Sanders about a year ago announcing his Medicare for All plan.
Today, we say the function of a rational healthcare system is to provide quality care to all in a cost-effective way, and not to continue a system which allows insurance companies and drug companies to make hundreds of billions of dollars in profits each year, and to make healthcare industry CEOs extremely wealthy. The strengths of a Medicare for All program are not only its universality and its cost effectiveness. It also ends the complexity of a system which adds enormous stress at a time when people need it the least. While depending on your income, your taxes may go up to pay for this publicly funded program, that expense will be more than offset by the money you are saving by the elimination of private insurance costs. And today, we tell the drug companies that the American people are sick and tired of the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. We are no longer going to get ripped off and pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs under Medicare for All. We're going to negotiate lower drug prices for the government and for every single American.
Well, doctor, tell us a little bit about how you felt about having this thing coming into existence again.
I believe it's the reincarnation of a single-payer system in a way.
Yeah.
It just that with a twist that we already have a system that, while not perfect and vilified by some, Medicare, is a whole lot better than the system of private insurance companies that have totally corrupted help corrupt the practice of medicine. And so I believe that this has been the answer for a long time. Of course, you know, the problem is that a whole lot of people in our country, being so polarized, feel that anything that is good for the people instead of the corporations, read insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, etc., feel that anything that helps the common people is socialism.
Yes. Oh, that's an important reality.
Exactly. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of the single-payer system or Medicare for All, perhaps we should talk about this underlying will not underline the elephant in the room.
I think it's a huge elephant, but what's really interesting is what's been going on in Venezuela, because the excuses that they're trying to use to actually create incursions into this country and actually create regime change are based on socialism. And recently, Trump has come out talking about the dangers of socialism and all that. And one of the problems that's so obvious and that's been pointed out by Michael Moore and everybody else is that this kind of system of a public health care is in all the developed countries except for ours, the large developed countries anyway.
Absolutely. We're dead last in the industrialized world. And, you know, that the cost of health care adds to the goods we create. So a factory making cars, if when you add the hidden cost of produced by insurance companies, which is inflated, adds to that car. So we become less competitive. And so it's not just an isolated thing. It's an economic thing, a moral thing, above all.
Yeah, you're not having the in other words, now the government would be paying for it instead of private enterprise sponsoring people with their own money. So, you know, the term socialism is really a kind of a funny term. And I almost think that democratic socialism could be called democratic capitalism, because it does allow for private ownership in of all kinds of things. It does make some exceptions with healthcare. But basically, the idea of a socialist state is a state that actually owns all of the, if you get to the extreme point, like the Soviet Union was supposed to be, it wasn't, but anyway, the government owns everything. The so-called people own everything, but it's really a small coterie of people in like a communist state like the Soviet Union, which own the major industries, right?
Exactly.
And that's no law. That's not at all what Bernie Sanders is talking about as democratic socialism.
No, it's not. It's just that it's a knee-jerk reflex to oppose anything that smacks of helping the people. But we're totally content with corporate welfare. That is handouts to corporate people who really don't need them. But I think it goes down so deep, you know, this issue of being so polarized, and it goes to the very issue of maturity, of integrative thinking. I believe that people who espouse polarizing ideologies are just immature people who do not get the very ancient concept of finding balance, of looking at the opposites to bring you to a middle instead of rejecting the other opposite. How straight can a bird fly with one wing? I don't care if the left wing or the right wing, it's just not going to work. And that's a basic principle of morality, of maturity, of tolerance, of communication. I mean, it's just so basic. And we are not laboring in a balanced way with this issue. And, you know, to get into economics, Adam Smith could not have said it best. He's often quoted as a right winger, if you will, mm-hmm. The invisible hand. You know what? He was totally 100% right. But he was also correct when he wrote in a follow-up text, Theories of Moral Sentiment, that the invisible hand has to be kept on a leash, that we have to keep an eye on the invisible hand, because when left to its own devices, will collude in secret to benefit those who wield the right hand against the left hand, the people. I mean, this is Adam Smith, and he never gets quoted fully, only the first part, which is convenient for those who stand to gain. It's like capitalism and labor, which is more important. I mean, what a stupid question. It's a balance of both. And we are not going to understand Medicare for All or single payer system or any other system that helps the people if we don't start from that basic premise, the premise that we need a balance of both philosophies, as exemplified in several European countries. But, you know, just saying Europe immediately alienates a whole lot of Make America Great people who feel that nothing from Europe is worth considering.
One of the problems is that you have a wide swath of people here who are just basically listening to mainstream news. They do not do any research at all, I don't think. They just basically work all day. They come home, they watch Fox News or something, or some videos that absolutely support their beliefs. They don't read anything. They're sort of like the president.
I mean, yes. He watches news. He doesn't read books, as far as I can tell. I know that all the presidents, even the ones that I really, really dislike, what they've been doing, are literate. And I think I'm that sure. An ordinary person should have enough literacy to say, hey, let's just find out what's going on in Sweden or England. And I've noticed I've got several videos here. I'd like you to hear one of them. And maybe you could just listen for a second.
This is a clip from FBN, the Fox News Network, with former gubernatorial candidate Republican John Cox, titled Democrats Are Beginning to Ditch Medicare for All Bill.
Just as we've been reporting, more and more Democrats are ditching their party's own Medicare for All bill, including Democrat senators. Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren is on the fence about it. So is Cory Booker. Also, Democrats Scott Peters and Alyssa Slotkin, to name a few. They recently endorsed more modest plans allowing for optional buy-ins. Let's bring in the former California gubernatorial candidate, John Cox. John, you know, the centrist Democrats that, you know, won their states or their districts, rather, away from other more liberal Democrats, they know what the moderate Democrats are about. They know that the Trump district matters to them, those voters as well. John, when they see the poll numbers dropping, Kaiser, Hill Harris, Morning Consult saying, hey, when we hear the details, we don't like Medicare for All. Are centrist Democrats rightfully worried about this?
Absolutely, and great to be with you again, Liz. You know, the reason that they're worried about it is because they're looking at the price tag for this thing. And of course, you know, the reason that healthcare is really getting to be so high in cost, Liz, is because there's almost no price transparency and there's no real involvement of the patient. You know, you walk into a hospital anywhere and you ask them what an MRI costs and nobody can tell you. And that's a problem. You know, if you look at LASIK or other services that really aren't covered by insurance, those prices have come down and the quality's gone up. And what's happened with the rest of medical care? The costs keep escalating and escalating and escalating. And that's going to be only worse if we get government-controlled health care. This is the kind of the creeping socialism that's going on in California
Both sides.
Look at what's going on.
Yeah, and California rejected single payer. It busts the bank over there.
So what did you think of that?
Okay, well, I think there's a lot of good and bad in that clip. Let's start with the good. Well, I'm glad that some Democrats are going against it because we got too many candidates and we need to narrow the field. So the heck with all those. So that makes it easier for me. Number two, the cost. Yeah, I totally agree. That is the most fundamental problem, and we'll get into that in a minute. But the guy is totally right. It's the cost, the problem, not that we want to finance the cost. So if we work on why the cost is so high, then that impediment or that objection to Medicare for All should go away. I mean, there will be some expenses, of course. There'll be a lot of gains. But the system is so bloated. We created a beast that needs to be fed, a whole lot of carcasses, a whole lot of innocent people, a whole lot of food that it's just obese promoting, if you will. In other words, there's a lot of pork. There's a lot of unnecessary procedures, et cetera, et cetera. That would have to be part of the solution. We can't just blindly say, let's have Medicare for All and finance the system as it is. So it's a two-pronged approach, and I hope that's made clear to people who study this.
We're going to be discussing that exact point, the obesity of the system, in just a few minutes. We're going to stop here for a few commercials.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
We pause now for a musical interlude. Over the past few years, I was very honored to work with Patricia Welch, a remarkable singer, and Edgar Arendts, a wonderful Russian composer, on the music for Hadley's Castle, a musical for which quite a number of songs have already been written, but there is still much to do. In the musical, the song you're about to hear, Your Kisses Never Die, is sung by a female American artist living in England in the late 1930s who has fallen in love with a Russian novelist. The novelist has migrated from Stalinist Russia to England under very unusual circumstances. They meet on a windswept beach. From her standpoint, this is a magical act of destiny. But from the Russian's point of view, he has captured his target, chosen for him to spy on by the Russian secret police. But though the meeting is not fated in one way, the depth of his and her love becomes very real, boding tragedy for a love that can only be fulfilled in peril. Here's Patricia Welch. Here's Patricia Welch in Your Kisses Never Die.
We must have known this place before, where waves crash cruelly on the shore. Embraces that are lost. of pure delight. Stolen kisses, pirates plunder, bodies crashing just like thunder. As we rode madly down the shore, pouring through love's open door, your kisses consumed in love's bright bloom. Dissolve beneath a maverick moon. Your kisses never die. They live inside of me. They linger on my lips like some familiar mystery. Your angel's touch has giant wings that beat against the sky. Your kisses live inside of me. Inside of me, they never die, they never die, they never die, they never die.
Hi, Doctor. We're discussing now the problems with the financing of Medicare for all. But I think there are some things that you brought up in the past that I think are really significant. One of them is that we have a lot of people in the medical field, a lot of physicians, MDs, who are basically specialists. And this has some great ramifications for the cost of Medicare and the, for instance, using certain kinds of surgical procedures when they're not really needed because people are immediately shipped over to a specialist by their general physician and they're not really handled in a way that would help them in the long run. Maybe you could discuss that if I've explained it correctly.
Sure. Before I start, full disclosure here. you quoted from CNN and Fox. I hate both. They are so unbalanced.
Oh, it's really terrible.
It just CNN, I mean, everything is wrong with Trump. Fox, everything is right with Trump. I mean, there might be exceptions. But shouldn't that be a clue that there's a problem here?
Yes.
It all began with that change in an approach to the media. It used to be a couple of three decades ago that if you got in front of the camera and provided a left-wing point, that you have to also provide a right-wing point.
Yeah.
Counterpoint.
Right.
It was mandatory. It's no longer mandatory. So you get these fanatics, ideologues on both sides that it's so off-putting. You know, more disclosure. There's a lot of what Trump says that I like, okay? A whole lot. But I just don't like the man. All right. Full disclosure here. There's a lot of what the Democrats say that I don't like either. What I'm saying is that what you said at the beginning, we need to think for ourselves. You know, sometimes we'll sound Democratic, other times Republican. What's wrong with that? Nothing.
No, it's an impediment to be polarized like these things are. And it is, I think it's a spiritual problem as well as a sort of an intellectual problem. But it is basically that you have, I mean, I listen to, say in CNN in the discussions of their pro-democratic thing, they're not interested in everybody. They'll pick apart the progressives, say, for instance, a lot of times because they don't really like the progressives because it's not fitting into their format. They'll present them, but they don't seem to like them that very much. One of the things that happened recently is that Bernie Sanders had his introductory presidential speech. And one of the CNN people said, this is terrible because he didn't talk about, you know, racial situations until the 23rd minute. But Elizabeth Warren brought it up in the first paragraph of what, you know, her speech. Glenn Greenwald, who of course, you know, is famous for helping Snowden, but is a famous commentator and now owns part of The Intercept, gave a discussion about wrote an article about this because it was a complete lie anyway. He was introduced by people highly involved in the civil rights movement, and he discussed it in the first paragraph too. But I mean, so Greenwald was very upset by the ability to blatantly lie and not get caught about that. You see what I mean? And that is a kind of a double bias, being saying something that's wrong, but probably saying it deliberately.
Well, it reminds me, I don't want to belabor the point, but it reminds me of this guy, I forget who it was, saying that Jesus Christ cannot swim. That's why he walked on water. You know, with all due respect to evangelists.
Yeah.
But you get the point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me quote a couple of articles that address this real well. There have been hundreds of these articles, but I just kind of cherry pick a little bit because they're so concise, so simple and to the point. And one of them is Business Week cover issue. It shows a roulette and a doctor standing before the roulette. And it basically tells you that 85% of what the medical system does has no basis in fact, but it's all only driven by profits.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're trying to finance. So you can see the pork and all the fat right there.
Well, first of all, you know, getting back to that thing about the specialists, there's a lot of money that goes out in terms of the specialists for pharmaceuticals and surgical operations that might not be necessary. But there's also the reality that a lot of that unnecessary stuff is probably in the area of big pharma.
Absolutely. Also surgery. An article just came out this week saying that arthroscopic surgery to the knee might not be a good thing. Really? And you just figure that out. Now, we've known about orthopedic surgery that about 80% of orthopedic surgeries are not necessary. The same goes for the shoulder and other joints. And then let's get started on the back. Surgery to the back is a well-known fact that 80% of back surgery is totally worthless and leaves people totally handicapped. With the same pain, now they have more back problems on account of the surgery. Take gallbladder surgery. Yes, there are cases, as there are in orthopedics, that you need to do surgery. But how many people are getting their gallbladder taken out just because of a little twinge, a little pain in the right upper quadrant, and a little slush? The bile looks a little slushy. Poof, there goes the gallbladder, as if it were an unnecessary organ. And so just about every field, you'll see more or less of 80% fat.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's H-U-G-O-R-O-D-I-E-R.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols. The musical in progress, Hadley's Castle, with lyrics by myself and composer Edgar Ahrens, is planned to be at first an album performed by Patricia Welch. This will be followed at some point by a full-length musical. Hadley's Castle is a love story taking place under very difficult and strange circumstances. A Russian novelist who has a proven record of service to the Russian government is the son of unfortunate parents living in crude circumstances in a Siberian prison, having fought against the Stalinist tyranny. The novelist has been tapped by the Russian dictatorship to spy on a female American artist in England, owing to a perceived value as a close associate of a high-ranking English military officer. Although previously loyal to his government, the artist now sees their use of his services as a spy, as blackmail to save his parents' lives, as despicable and corrupt. These feelings are further disrupted by his enormous attraction to the artist who he has fallen for, despite the vast conflicts they must eventually share. She holds on to her dream, though, despite everything, as expressed in the song, Love Never Withers.
The whistling wind makes me shiver. Its gray shrieks make me cry. I remember the joyous gleam that it stole from my eyes. I remember that day when the wind swept away life's dear comfort and warmth on that bitter autumn day. Maple leaves curl and quiver and flail in the air. Their rude act of dying paints red brown everywhere. But I know harsh enchantment can't turn real love astray, because carousels, ruckus dance, far from destiny's light. Silly children we played, but forgot how to pray. We were trapped in ourselves, and we couldn't get. Shalom.
Here's another article proving the point we've been making from the Journal of the American Medical Association, 2013, Bridging the Divide Between Health and Healthcare. So let me quote. Healthcare delivery accounts for only 10% of preventable deaths, with the remainder attributable to personal behaviors, social and environmental determinants, and genetic predispositions. As currently constituted, the healthcare delivery system has little direct control over these other factors. However, consensus is developing that truly controlling healthcare costs and improving the overall health of Americans will require a much closer partnership, permeable boundaries, and increased interdependence among the healthcare delivery system, the public sector, and the community development and social service sectors. To create a culture of health will require creating a market for health, moving away from the current market for treating disease, unquote. Now, how about that?
Well, she didn't really go into the, or he, whoever wrote it didn't go into the details of what that actually meant, though. I mean, like, for instance, part of the problem is Big Pharma is so integrated into everything, and that's a huge cost. And it's a wasted cost a lot of times because people are just not really treating their condition, correct?
Right. The solution is already there, and a lot of people are implementing the solution on their own, sick of the system. And to name, one-fourth the doctors have really gotten the message, and they already practice prevention and nutrition and counseling and all these other things that are not covered very well or at all, and they reduce the cost of healthcare significantly in their own little privates and their own little neighborhoods, and I happen to be one of them, and I'm not unique by any means. This is a quiet grassroots revolution, not only from doctors but from patients. And so, yes, we have a solution. We know how to do it. It's just that the people feeding at the trough, and you name them, insurance companies, Big Pharma, and other administrators and politicians getting their palms greased, don't want to lose all that fat. And yeah. So the solution is there. Implementing it is going to be a problem, particularly from those people crying socialism, while on the other hand, they are complicit in the system of corporate welfare. Yes, we're subsidizing the healthcare industry, Big Pharma, and insurance companies in indirect ways, and some direct as well.
Well, the thing, do you remember Sicko by Michael Moore, the movie?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I remember how Hillary Clinton walks into the Senate and all these different lobbyists come up with like a little cartoon bubble on top of her. You know, all these people are tremendously influenced by their lobbyists and their basically by their patrons, the corporations. And that is a huge problem because the engine of those of that propaganda flows from video. And from television, really. And it's a hard thing. It's hard to deal with because these people are genuinely programmed not to think and to just watch television.
Exactly. So the word socialism, they branded as a sword. And, you know, it reminds me of Oppenheimer. You recall?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, he had something to say about science because we're really going against science here. Because of ideologies. But Oppenheimer said, there is no place for dogma in science. The scientist is free to ask any question, to doubt any assertion, to seek for any evidence, to correct any error. Where science has been used in the past to erect a new dogmatism, that dogmatism has found itself incompatible with the progress of science. And in the end, the dogma has yielded, or science and freedom has perished altogether, unquote. Sad, sad, sad.
Well, I mean, speaking of Oppenheimer, we can speak of a little bit about the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, which a lot of the people who believe in their own private health system also solidly endorse without thinking or even realizing the dangers of it. And those are, of course, massive dangers to the entire planet. So there's a lot of things that go on because of this, including all these endless wars, because of this this brainwashing that has occurred. Now, how do you deal with that? How do you really deal with that? Because you're dealing with probably a fourth or a third of the electorate of the United States.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I think that the answer is going to be very, very Chinese, if you will, one step at a time, until the apple, when it's finally ripe, it falls. We're not going to be able to hurry the process. And I think as the people begin to be more educated about these basic issues, we'll then start to elect better people. So we can't, in another word to say it is, we just have to wait for this generation to die off.
We cannot change
our minds.
But it's a real impediment because there's so many dangers involved right now in our economy. Just our economy alone is possibly you're having a monetary system that could really collapse because we're in so desperate amount of debt. And the stock market, for instance, is, and probably many other aspects like gold and silver, they're being manipulated by government and in terms of the stock market by the central banks.
Exactly.
So what we have here is like this. We need a healthcare system now.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that this Medicare for All might go through. But it's going to be flawed.
No doubt. But I view all that, we talked about this before, about change. You know, you like a more dramatic change. I like a more gradual change. Let me give you a quote here from the National Center for Health Statistics. It is now estimated that regular Americans are spending over $30 billion out of pocket a year on healthcare. Why? Because they see what they get through their insurance is totally bogus. Well, I shouldn't say that. 20% is good. We do need pharmaceuticals and surgery and this and that on occasion. But a lot of people are figuring out that they have to pay out of pocket to get the real care we need, which we mentioned already, nutrition, prevention, physical therapy for a whole lot of orthopedic cases, et cetera, et cetera. So my point being that the powers that be are looking at this $30 billion and they see it as a loss. And so another example is this whole brouhaha about GMO labeling. Have you noticed that it kind of went away? We don't talk about it anymore?
Yeah.
Well, you know why? It's because people themselves, going to the store, began to buy things that were clearly labeled no GMO, which some people were doing on their own. And so it became a moot point because people themselves voted with their wallet that that's what they want. So all these regulations, whether to do it or not, that is label the food, the packages, went away because we voted with our wallets, and now you go to any store and the non-GMO stuff is just filling the shelves.
Well, I'll say in Fresh Market, where we shop here in Utah, the organic section has really, I mean, it's really grown. It's actually almost the same. I would say it's not exactly the same size as the rest, but it's about a third, something like that. I mean, and that's astounding.
Exactly. Even Costco, a whole lot of their stuff is clearly labeled organic.
Yeah.
So follow the money. And so instead of, you know, belly aching like some progressives will do about being so economic minded, well, we need to use that tool too and implement changes through some monetary policy as well.
There's another problem. The problem is that people right now are spending tons of money on credit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to really hurt them very soon. It hasn't really completely penetrated, but it's a huge bubble. And I think that it's a bubble that's going to burst because, you know, despite all the stuff about, you know, the currency or the market doing well or not doing well, that is a reality. And so people are going to have less money to spend unless something happens. And look at how many people are uninsured right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have my own viewpoint. Like I mentioned, I'm one of those docs who dropped out of the system.
Right.
And I have very happy patients who don't have insurance. They don't live by fear. And so if they come in worrying about something, I say, look, you can decrease your chances of this and that disease by eating your veggies. And it's so basic. In fact, I just saw an article in the last issue of the JAMA about the best way to treat depression. And I'm going to blog about that this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But the article is pretty clear. To treat depression best and cheapest, you've got to talk about nutrition and counseling and meditation and relaxation and relationships, et cetera, et cetera. The article still maintains that, you know, from time to time we need pharmaceuticals for depression. True, especially if you're about to kill yourself.
Yeah.
But it's a step in the right direction. And the article concludes that this is a way to lower cost. I have another great article here in front of me from the British Medical Journal in 2013, warning, austerity can seriously damage your health. And the subtitle, Hurtling Down the Road to Ruin. So the author is saying that the trillions of dollars we spend on colonoscopies, on this and that, is overutilization that is hurting the system. You know, I hear it every day, Johnny.
Yeah.
People come in with IBS, you know what that is?
Yeah.
Right? Irritable bowel syndrome,
mm-hmm.
which, as you know, it's a disorder of the intestinal flora because you're eating so poorly, exacerbated by pesticides and a whole lot of antibiotics and the purple pill, acid-blocking pills. And so most of these people, I'd say over 90%, over 90, 95%, that's what it is. But these people go enter the system, and guess what? The first thing is they get a colonoscopy, even in teenagers, even in young people. Now, if you're an old fart and you come in with these symptoms and you've never had them before, you should get a colonoscopy yesterday, all right? But when you're talking about healthy people, pretty young people, and the first thing they get is a colonoscopy without even talking about the history, because the history will tell you everything you need to know. Of course, you know, if a young person does all these good things and changes their diet and they're still having symptoms, you should get a colonoscopy. But by me quoting the simple example, that simple article, it lets you know that you could extrapolate to every other complaint. A headache. All right. Yeah, most of the time it's stress and you're eating poorly, the brain-gut connection and maybe neck problems, orthopedic problems in the upper spine and even the lower spine, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, you work on those things and you get resolution. If you don't, you should have an MRI. But when you go into the system and you open your mouth and say a headache, you're out of there in the next 5 minutes with an order for an MRI, well, you see the problem, don't you?
Yeah.
So that's how austerity can seriously damage your health.
Yeah, it's a big problem. For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. We will now go out with an older version of The Best Things in Life Are Free with Jack Hilton, performed in 1928.
Bird is